Now cast your mind back, if you will, to the early 1960s. The Soviet Union and the United States had, in the late 1950s, begun to launch satellites into orbit around the Earth. It was becoming apparent that these satellites had more than scientific potential. Uses were seen in military, reconnaissance, meteorology, and communications. It was quickly realized that if Europeans were to have an independent access to these benefits and economic advantages of using space, they would need to have their own rockets. Else they would be at the subject of the political whims of the United States and Russia. Well, to this end, the European Launcher Development Organization was formed. After much discussion, plans were drawn up for a new rocket based on components built by the United Kingdom, France, Germany, and Italy. Now, what to call this European rocket? Well, in Greek mythology, Europa was the daughter of Phoenix. She was ravished across the sea by an amorous Zeus disguised as a bull. And so began the Europa project, which was to run from the early 1960s until the early 1970s. Well, having decided on a rocket design, Aldo had to find somewhere to test it. There was nowhere suitable in Europe, but down in Australia, there was a weapons and rocket test range based in a small town called Woomera. This range extended across thousands of kilometres of Spinifex and Gibber country. All of the way across South Australia, the Northern Territory and Western Australia. The best part was that the range was only sparsely inhabited. Perhaps, thought the Europeans, the Aussies might agree to the use of Woomera for Aldo. After all, the Poms and the Yanks were already using the range. Not only did the Aussies agree, they also chipped in a great deal of cash to further develop the requisite launch pads, roads and tracking stations. And so began a collaboration between Europe and Australia that saw 10 Europa launches between 1964 and 1970. This week marks the 45th anniversary of the final of these Woomera rocket launches, and so this evening the Space Show looks at the story of Europa in Australia. In the ambitious plans drawn up by Aldo, there would be a series of ever more adventurous Europa rockets with series numbers 1, 2, 3, and 4. Sometimes these would be called Aldo A, B, C, and D. The basic Europa 1 would be able to launch 1,200 kilograms into low Earth orbit. It was estimated that it would cost £70 million to develop the to operational status. It was soon realized that low Earth orbit was not where the money-earning payloads needed to go. They needed to reach geostationary orbit, some 36,000 kilometers above the equator. So it was proposed to add two extra transfer stages or motors to the three-stage Europa 1. This could enable the placement of a 205-kilogram satellite in geostationary orbit, but only if launched from an equatorial launch site. The fate of Woomera as a permanent launch site was already doomed before launches began. By 1966, the projected cost had inflated to approximately £150 million, with an extra stages for a geostationary mission to cost between £30 million and £80 million. Meanwhile, plans for Europa 1 development were firming up, as were ideas for the successor, Europa 2. Europa 1 would consist of three stages. Stage 1 would be based on the cancelled British ballistic missile, Blue Streak. Sitting atop it would be the French-built Coralie, supporting the German Astra's third stage. On top of the stack would be an Italian satellite enclosed during initial ascent through the Earth's atmosphere by a payload shroud. Europa 1 would be tested in three phases. The first phase consisted of three flights, and they would be suborbital, and they'd use only a single stage, that is the Blue Streak. Now, phase 2 would also be suborbital, successively adding the French and German stages. Phase 3 would be orbital missions using all three stages. After these tests, the project would move to a new base to be built at Kourou, near the equator in French Guiana. And just a reminder that French Guiana is on the Atlantic coast of South America. Well, by 1964, the first blue streak had arrived by ship at Port Adelaide and then rowed to Woomera. On June the 5th at 9:14 a.m. South Australian time, Europa 1F1, the F for flight number 1, was launched.
Ready for testing. No new sight in this day and age, but this is a rocket with a difference. This giant will blast a new route to the stars as part of a European plan to put a new satellite into space. The rocket is British. Its name is Blue Streak. It's part of a project which links seven nations together in the European Launcher Development Organization. The rocket, in its present state, is backed by the long record of experience dating from the pioneer days of flight, which has put the British aircraft industry among the world's leaders, and to experience in the space age fields of rocket propulsion, electronics, radio, and radar and micro-miniaturization, the logical development of Britain's pioneer work in man's mastery of the air. Nearly a decade of development work has gone into the giant, begun as a weapons system, a means of delivering a nuclear warhead some 3,000 miles. Blue Streak ceased eventually to be required for this purpose. But already, many saw her in a different role. And in 1961, the European Launcher Development Organization was formed to use Blue Streak as the first stage of a composite space vehicle. 300 miles northwest of Adelaide, just to the north of a dry salt pan called Lake Hart, is Woomera Range, where, since Blue Streak's static test in England, work has been going on to prepare for her arrival at the special site, Launcher Area Number 6. Soon, this first test vehicle will be known by a number instead of a name, F1. She'll have several successors, with dummy second and third stages, until F7 is reached, which will carry Europe's first test satellite into space. But F1 still has to prove herself here at Woomera, Australia's outpost of science on the trail into space. Less than 20 years ago, it was no more than an isolated halt on the Trans-Australian Railway. Today, it's a busy little town in the middle of nowhere, with a population of well over 5,000, including 1,600 children, and a well-equipped hospital. 28 miles out of the town, Blue Streak is now at her launch site. For the range staff and the trials team, weeks of preparation lie ahead. Weeks of precise work at Launcher 6A, and all the way down the 1,000-mile desert range, perhaps the best overland rocket range in the world. Out on the scattered and remote radar stations like Admira Carter. In the instrumentation building, where telltale signals from Blue Streak will be recorded showing how she's behaving in flight. And at the camera outposts, where powerful lenses and precise tracking will catch the flight on film. Everything is checked and rechecked. There's a dummy run, taking the countdown to within 2 seconds of blast-off. Now the service tower is withdrawn, and it's time to transfer the liquid oxygen from ground storage to the launcher. Access to the rocket, painted with its flight marking, is restricted from now on. There's a hold period to warn the range of Blue Streak's impending fueling. An hour and a half to the launch now. Transfer of liquid oxygen is always left to the last for safety reasons, and also because of its low boiling point that causes loss of fuel due to boil-off before the flight. Into Blue Streak's tanks go 60 tons of liquid oxygen to add to the 27 tons of kerosene already loaded. Now the technicians must get out to a safe distance some 4,000 feet away. In the instrumentation building 10 miles away is the digital impact computer that will constantly predict Blue Streak's point of impact from the instruments tracking her flight. If she strays off her safe course, the computer will detect it instantly. On the floor above, the trials control officer is receiving the final ready signals. Beside him for this critical occasion are the principal officer of the range and the scientist in charge from Farnborough in England. The decision is taken. The trial is on. From now on, the countdown is automatic to avoid human error through stress. Blue Streak systems are still being checked, but automatically. Should anything go wrong, the countdown would stop, again, automatically. The final 10 seconds. 20-second vertical climb, controlled by her autopilot, then Blue Streak changes direction. 0.7 degrees a second, until her thrust chambers swivel her to an angle 30 degrees above the horizon. If she strays, if something goes wrong, a finger on that button would destroy her instantly. But she is on course, northwest, across hundreds of miles of Australian desert, watched on sky screens, on radar, and by dozens of cameras and hundreds of people. Still on a safe flight path, climbing to around 50 miles high before her fuel is done, then to a height of over 100 miles by her own momentum. For Mrs. Lawrence, it's a camera's eye preview of the day when one of Blue Streak's successors will help Europa 1 to boost a one-ton satellite into orbit 300 miles high, or perhaps to place an electronic reporter on the moon itself.
The rocket was tracked visually up to an altitude of 30 kilometres and thereafter by radar to a height of 170 kilometres and a speed of 10,000 kilometres per hour. Most of the powered flight went according to plan, but the last 6 seconds were curtailed. As the tanks emptied, the remaining propellants began to slosh about, causing oscillations to build up, which the sensitive steering system could not cope with. The rocket first rolled, then cartwheeled spectacularly across the sky before the two engines cut out. Now, as the Blue Streak entered the atmosphere, the automatic breakup system triggered, and the remnants crashed to Earth 1,000 kilometres northwest of Woomera. And we have some sound of that as well.
Hundreds of miles of nothingness in the Australian outback called Woomera, which is an Aborigine word for throwing stick. And of all the throwing sticks anyone's ever tried out around here, this hangar shelters the biggest and certainly the most expensive. 4 years ago, Blue Streak was a medium-range ballistic missile that had just been cancelled at fantastic cost. Today, bowler-hatted, so to speak, it's ready for testing in quite a different role, as the first stage of the seven-nation project to put a European satellite into orbit in 2 years' time. The two-day countdown is in progress, not for the first time. Weather and unexpected snags had caused disappointment in the past few days, but this time, in the official language, all systems are operating as planned. Textbook launching, and first tracking reports show that she's bang on course. All 69 feet of her, all 92 tons, though she is lighter already because 90% of her launching weight is fuel and oxygen. When the big day comes, Britain's Blue Streak will carry a French second stage, a West German third stage, and an Italian satellite with Dutch and Belgian instruments. The two Rolls-Royce rocket engines develop over a quarter of a million pounds of thrust between them. Once, Blue Streak was a dirty word. Now it looks as though Europe has backed a winner.
Europa 1 F2, again just the Blue Streak, was launched on 1964, October the 20th. That flight was successful. The final Phase 1 launch, Europa 1 F3, occurred on 1965, March the 22nd.
At the Woomera Rocket Range in Australia, three successes for Blue Streak. Three launches, all perfect. This British Commonwealth and European seven-nation project has none of its scientific eyes on the moon. Blue Streak is to be the booster section of a three-stage rocket to put a satellite into orbit. When all the checks are made and every conceivable precaution taken, there's still tense, exciting minutes as the countdown approaches zero. Nothing went wrong with Blue Streak. What a thrilling sight, and never before has a launch been so brilliantly photographed. In a few short years, we've come to take the conquest of space for granted. It is still something of a miracle.
With Phase 1 complete, the European Launcher Development Organisation felt emboldened to advance to Europa 1 Phase 2. The F4 flight on 1966, May the 24th, used the Blue Streak first stage with dummy second and third stages. Now, liftoff at 9:06 a.m. appeared normal. However, the flight was abruptly curtailed when, 135 seconds after liftoff, the flight data from the Red Lake radar station suggested that the rocket had abruptly turned to port. Over a span of a few seconds, the plot moved quickly towards the left-hand cut-down boundary of the first flight path. Flight Safety Officer Jack Evans manually triggered the explosive charges that destroyed the rocket. The remnants crashed into the Simpson Desert north of Woomera. As the distress signal was sent, the trajectory plot started to return, indicating normal flight. Several causes were found, both with the rocket radar transponder placement and the premature reaction from Jack Evans. This resulted in a great deal of bad feeling between some of the European rocket people and the Australian tracking and range safety staff. Well, later that year, on November the 15th, the Europa 1 F5 was ready, again with the Blue Streak live first stage and dummy upper stages. The F5 mission went well. It reached an altitude of over 100 kilometres and remnants of it fell into the Simpson Desert southeast of Alice Springs. Well, 1967 was to be a busy year at Woomera. Not only were the Europeans forging ahead with their Europa 1 tests, the United States Army was launching ballistic missile reentry test vehicles. They brought 10 Redstone rockets with them for Project Sparta. Now, Redstone had been the first stage of the Juno 1 rocket that launched America's first satellite, as well as being used for the first two United States astronauts. They fired off 9 of these Redstone rockets, and rather than take the 10th home, they said to the Aussies, "Hey mate, do you want it?" And the Weapons Research Establishment in Salisbury and Adelaide said, "Yes, please," and set to developing a satellite. Well, meanwhile, Europa 1 F6-1 was readied for launch. This had a live Blue Streak first stage, a live Coralie second stage, and a dummy third stage. On August the 4th, the Blue Streak rose above the Gibbers and Spinifex and raced high into the atmosphere. Its job successfully done, Blue Streak separated and eventually fell back to Earth. But the French Coralie engines did not ignite, and it too fell prematurely back to Earth. By late November, the scientists and engineers in Salisbury on the outskirts of Adelaide had their satellite ready. The Redstone, freshly painted white over the United States Army camouflage green, was erected on the pad. Now, it was due to be launched on 1967, November the 28th. The actual launch occurred the day after. Now, RESAT-1, as the satellite was called, was 45 kilograms in mass. It was 223 centimeters high and had a diameter of 76 centimeters. It was placed into a polar orbit. And the orbit that was planned was 1280 by 160 kilometres, and it was a planned useful life of 10 days. And it was to study the upper atmosphere and climate effects. Now, the actual orbit it got into was an inclination of 83.35 degrees, and apogee, or highest point, was 1251 kilometres, and the low point was 192 kilometres, and it went round the Earth every 99.27 minutes. Now, this was the first satellite ever to be launched from Woomera, and it made Australia the seventh nation in space. And it transmitted until 1967, December the 8th, and decayed from orbit on January the 10th of the following year. Well, as 1967 neared its end, the Europeans were ready for another flight test of Europa 1, this flight designated F6-2. Again, on December 7, the Blue Streak did its job of lofting the Coralie live stage and Astra's dummy stage. But unfortunately, the Coralie did not separate. Now, the Aldo Council was unwilling to agree to a complete overhaul of Coralie, which obviously by this time had problems. And this would have meant a delay of the F7 to 1969 instead of 1968. So, after F6, the management of the Coralie was transferred from the Laboratoire de Recherches Balistiques et Aérodynamiques to the Société d'études et de réalisation de engins balistiques, otherwise known as SEREB, CEREB. Now, CEREB was contracted to concentrate only on the critical problem areas. These were seen as the sequencer and related avionics. They made these fixes, and these fixes by the new contractor must have been successful because the Coralie performed properly in the F7, F8 and F9 flights of Europa 1. Now, these three final WOMERA launches were orbital attempts with all stages live and a test satellite each. On November 30 of 1968, the Europa F was launched, and the Asterisk, which is the German upper stage, burnt for only 7 seconds, then cut out and exploded. Now, the reason was that an explosive bolt had inadvertently been triggered by a stray electrical current. Now, this explosion of an essential part of the safety system perforated the diaphragm separating the fuel and the oxidant. On 1969, July 3, they figured that fixed that problem and the F8 was ready for launch. But with the tank, piping and circuitry being heavily modified, but the rocket failed again in just the same way. Well, after F8, the design of the Asterisk third stage was grimly reviewed, right down to the last nut and bolt. More than 100 engineers and two separate teams were drawn from 20 aerospace companies for this review. The conclusion for both the F7 and F8 failures of the Asterisk? Possibly due to the accidental operation of the self-destruct system. So they busily redesigned this for the F9 flight. Now, the Europa 1 F9 was originally scheduled for 1969 November the 24th, but was pushed back to first 1970 April and then to 1970 June to allow the intensive investigation of the Asterisk engine problem. And so we come to the final Australian Europa 1 launch 45 years ago this week. Hopes were high that after so many setbacks, this flight would succeed in placing a satellite into polar low Earth orbit. The rocket was targeted to ascend northwards from WOMERA and across the Northern Territory. The Blue Streak would crash to Earth in the Northern Territory and the Coralie in the ocean north of New Guinea. Asterisk and its satellite, STV-3, Satellite Test Vehicle Number 3, would cross the East China Sea and the North Pole. The orbit would take it south along the Atlantic to Antarctica and so on around the world. On 1970 June the 12th, all was ready. The rocket and its payload had been meticulously inspected. At 10:40 a.m., the firing command was issued. Europa 1 F9 rose above Lake Hart and headed northward. The two first-stage engines with a thrust of 1,340 kilonewtons burned for 157 seconds. Then it was the Coralie's turn, and their engines burnt for 105 seconds. The 300-kilogram nose fairing should have been released and discarded at 222 seconds after liftoff, that is, during the second stage burn. However, it did not do so due to the premature disconnection of an electrical connector 78 seconds after launch. Now, this connector was supposed to carry the separation command signal, and the plug was forced out of contact by the pressure of air trapped behind it. Its fuel spent, Coralie separated, leaving Asterisk to try and struggle into orbit. Now, the Astrus rocket had a mass of 3,960 kilograms and a thrust of 22.4 kilonewtons. The Astrus engine burnt for 367 seconds in place of the scheduled 356. And this reflected an attempt to compensate for the extra mass of the still-attached payload fairing. The flow of the tank pressurization helium gas was greater than normal, causing a relief valve to open and vent gas overboard. Well, during the later stage of the burn, therefore, insufficient gas remained to maintain pressure in the tank, and consequently, there was a progressive reduction in thrust from the normal 22.4 kilonewtons. The two 490-newton thrust verniers also lost thrust because they operated from the common pressurization system. Well, the 260-kilogram payload consisted of the 214-kilogram satellite test vehicle number 3 and an adapter containing the radio guidance equipment. Because of the extra mass of the nose fairing, the effective mass of the satellite was increased beyond the ability of the third stage propulsion system to place it in orbit. The velocity actually attained by the satellite was 7,100 meters per second instead of the 7,893 meters per second needed to achieve orbit. The combined third stage, nose fairing and enclosed satellite flew north over Indonesia, the Pacific Ocean and the North Pole. It then coasted south across Greenland and came down in the Caribbean Sea, just off the north coast of South America. An early incorrect statement by ALDO officials said it had come down in Greenland. Well, the combined satellite and fairing assembly could have been injected into a lower orbit than planned if the third stage had functioned properly. Now, helium for the third stage propellant system was carried in storage tanks under a pressure of 40.5 megapascals. The helium passed through two reduction valves in order to bring it to a nominal pressure of 1.8 megapascals. The third stage pressurization sequencer started on schedule at 195 seconds after launch during the second stage burn. But the pressure rose to 2.1 megapascals and helium venting started. At second and third stage separation, helium tank pressure dropped to 20.3 megapascals. The third stage main engine and verniers fired on schedule at 267 seconds and functioned normally for 133 seconds. The main engine combustion chamber pressure started dropping 400 seconds after launch, but the engine continued to give normal thrust. At 550 seconds, combustion chamber oscillation started and the thrust dropped rapidly. The third stage had been programmed to burn for 356 seconds. Because of the declining thrust, the ground control station did not transmit a cutoff signal. The engine burn lasted 367 seconds, that is, until 634 seconds after launch. At this time, the fuel system pressure fell below 406 kilopascals and cavitation occurred in the compression chamber. The vernier motors burned until 530 seconds, then cut off for 10 seconds when fuel pressure oscillations began. The verniers fired intermittently thereafter between 540 and 580 seconds. Well, the Europa 1 official said the third stage problem most likely was blockage in the second reduction valve. In that initial planning, there had been a Europa 1 F-10 orbital launch from Woomera, but it had been cancelled years earlier, so there would be no opportunity to try again for Europa 1. After this failure, Europa operations at Woomera were closed down and attention shifted to the new launch site in French Guiana. Although ALDO was leaving, the British continued their activities with a squat-looking rocket called Black Arrow. On 1970 September the 2nd, they tried to launch a satellite called Orba, O-R-B-A. This 15-kilogram satellite failed to reach orbit. Discouraged by this failure, Britain cancelled its Black Arrow. There would be one final launch. On 1971, October the 28th, Black Arrow R3 lofted Prospero into orbit. After this, the Brits packed up and went home. The Aldo facilities were sold for scrap or demolished. The concrete launch pad and flame trench were used for bombing practice. And the Aldo Management Group in South Australia disbanded in 1971 July, and the last representative returned to Europe in 1973 July. Meanwhile, Aldo set up shop in French Guiana and proceeded with the Europa 2 project. Having skipped Europa 1 F10, the first flight was to be Europa 2 F11. By 1971, November the 5th, all was ready for this satellite launch.
The 5th of November 1971 was set as the date for the first launch from the new site in French Guiana. It would be the new beginning for Europa and the European efforts to build an independent space program. The machine was damned. This would become the most spectacular of all the Europa failures. To begin with, it went well. Ground controllers tracked Europa as it soared up into the blackness of space. But then, disaster. The Blue Streak first stage slammed into the fuel tank of the French second stage, and the rocket went up in a massive fireball. Enough was enough. The explosion signalled the death of Aldo. Its member states decided to kill it off.
So there we were at Kourou on 1971, November the 5th, for Europa 2 F11. Well, signals from the onboard inertial guidance system stopped 1 minute 45 seconds after launch. This left the Blue Streak first stage engines locked in a pitch-over position. An explosion occurred at the top of the first stage 2 minutes 30 seconds into the mission. The Blue Streak's engines were continuing to drive the vehicle's pitch past the desired 70.4 degree trajectory into a nose-down attitude of 110 degrees. The vehicle was falling sideways when the explosion occurred. The combined third and fourth stages of the perigee motor and satellite payload continued along the launch trajectory after the explosions. They impacted in the South Atlantic Ocean about 500 kilometres downrange. Now, Britain, seduced by the promise of cheap satellite launches by the just-announced United States Space Shuttle, withdrew from Aldo. Soon after, Aldo collapsed when France and Germany went on to use the Aldo experience to develop their own rocket. This rocket, which came to be known as Ariane, was so successful it and its descendants has captured the lion's share of the commercial launch services market. The space shuttle was never a commercial success, and to this day the United Kingdom buys rocket launches from Arianespace, as does Australia. 45 years ago this week then, the final European Launcher Development Organisation flight from Woomera, the Europa 1 F9. This has been The Space Show with Andrew Rennie.
Hey, we're Axe Girl!
Woo! And you're listening to 88.3 Southern FM.